Hello.
And Sven, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me there?
There you are, yeah. Yeah, we didn't have a break at the bottom of the hour, so I couldn't really prepare for you properly. But everybody joining us from the UK, if I'm not mistaken, Sven Longshanks again. He is with, again, Radio Albion. He has a show that broadcasts daily, The Daily Nationalist. It goes out, I believe, at 12 o'clock Eastern. It's usually a 35-minute show. You can catch it at radioalbion.com. And, of course, he also rebroadcasts the entire schedule starting, I believe, at 8 o'clock in the evening. And that will go for another 6 hours. And then I don't know how he does the rest, but you can check all his work out. He's got Dennis Wise there, of course. We all know Dennis Wise. And so, Sven, I just want to say thank you for coming on. I had been giving you a listen a few shows about your commentary on what's happening with Black Lives Matter and thought you were doing a great job. So thought I'd ask you to come. And so thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Dennis. Yeah, we've got quite a few shows that I produce over at Radio Albion, Real Britannia, Church of the Lampshade, The Orthodox Nationalist, Audio Insurgency, the one with Dennis, Truth Will Out Radio, and the latest show to join us is Patriotic Weekly Review, which is Mark Cullett's show, which also goes out on YouTube. I'm very pleased that he's now working with us. But yeah, the station's been going for about four or five years now in all. So I'm pleased that we've managed to keep it going. And we've had a few name changes over the years. We went from Radio Stormer to Radio Aryan to now Radio Albion, which is a little bit more accessible for people. And yeah, we cover all sorts of different stuff for right the way through from revisionist history to current events, as you were just mentioning there with Black Lives Matter. I mean, that's just incredible what's going on over here in Britain at the moment. The change in the narrative. It was only just last week that they were arresting white people that were calling for an end to the lockdown and saying that they were putting everybody's lives at risk by going out. And today there's 15,000 mainly black people in London. Thankfully, it's raining on them. None of them have been arrested. They were out earlier this week. They defaced the cenotaph, which is probably the most sacred memorial that we have in Britain. It's in the centre of London. All the politicians go there to lay wreaths on Memorial Sunday to remember all those that lost their lives in the First World War. And they've covered it in paint. It's got ACAB written on it, Black Lives Matter, all sorts.
You know, Steven, this is what I don't understand about these people. They are so irreverent to everything. You should have seen what they did to the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. Just absolutely trashed it. The irreverence of these people, it's like there's no bounds to this. They are just completely irreverent towards anything. No respect for any history.
Well, I think, and it doesn't matter what you do for them either. It really doesn't matter what you do for them. It will never be enough. Just look at what they're doing now. They're going out and they're rioting and they're looting and they're saying that despite the virus, they have to go out because racism is so important. And yet, just a couple of days ago, they were saying, well, because of this virus, we are all getting affected by it so much more than anybody else. And it's all the white man's fault. It's all because we don't have enough money. We don't have large enough houses. And yet here they are going out, not socially distancing, not wearing masks in a huge throng of 15,000 people, which obviously, if the virus is still out there and if it is as contagious as they say it is, they're going to catch it basically. And then the next minute they'll be blaming the white man again for the fact that a load of them have come down with this virus. It doesn't matter what we do. They will continually accuse us of being the fault of all their problems. I mean, look what they've got us doing now. They've got people kneeling down to them in a sign of submission. I mean, that's incredible.
That is incredible. Tell us, you obviously been in the nationalist movement for quite some time. How long you been in the nationalist movement?
Probably about 10 years. About 10 years, something like that. I mean, I wasn't really that involved at first. I sort of came into it through the conspiracy side of things, which back then you could go on a conspiracy theory website and there was loads of them around, loads of blogs around, and there would be a blog roll and the blog roll would take you off to loads of other conspiracy theory sites, and there would be lots of nationalist stuff in there, lots of historical revisionism in there as well. And I used to really get into that, and I used to like leaving comments and writing blog posts. And I had a little blog called Verschwörerin Weltanschauung, which just had my views on it. And in Britain at the time, the BNP had a really toxic name, National Front had a really toxic name. And I sort of came across all this racial nationalist literature from America. And I really didn't come across much of it from Britain at all, but it really did seem to be as close to the truth as we could get. It really, you know, it chimed true with me, and I wanted to do something. But I you know, the BNP were falling apart. The National Front, as I say, it had a toxic name, and it seemed that there was a new movement that was beginning with white people everywhere, really. I know there'd been like white nationalism 1.0 before, but that had a lot of negative things. Again, it had a toxic name to it, the people that were involved with that. So it seemed that there was a new movement that was sort of featuring people like Mike Delaney, John Friend, Andrew Anglin. And I went to Andre, as I knew him at the time, because he was looking to start the Daily Stormer, which was totally different back then. And he wanted somebody to repost articles from news sites like the Daily Express and the Daily Mail and go through the news and find the articles that were relevant to race. And also I used to manage the spirituality section, because it had a specifically Christian section that was on the website, and it was supposed to be serious news that was of interest to white people that wasn't being covered elsewhere, and also pointing out the patterns that you could see in these news stories. So I started out doing that, and I used to really enjoy listening to podcasts, and I was listening to him with Carolyn Yeager, and it seemed that she was sort of asking him questions that she was hoping he wouldn't know the answer to. And I thought, well, you should really do a podcast, Andre, that puts you in a good light and asks you questions about things that you've just been writing about. So we started doing Radio Stormer, and that was really, really popular. But it took a lot of work, and I don't think he really wanted to put the work in for the amount of people that listened to it. You can write an article very, very quickly, and you can get lots of hits on it, very, very fast turnover, and you just wanted lots of clicks on the website. So he sort of lost interest in that, but he was good enough to say, well, you can continue doing it. And that was when we changed it to Radio Aryan, and Dennis Wise joined us, Grandpa Lampshade joined us, Matthew Heinbach joined us, who has left the movement now, and he put me in touch with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, who used to do the Orthodox Nationalist, very popular series on Voice of Reason, and he's still with us. I work quite a lot with Matt Johnson, and then eventually we had creative differences. The Daily Stormer had really gone in one direction, which was trying to shock people and a lot of trolling, basically. Whereas we were trying to do more serious content, if you know what I mean. So we totally split then, and I've been managing it myself ever since, probably about 3 years ago.
Now I come out of the. Sven, I come out of the Oracle broadcasting days, you know, back when Oracle was probably one of the better American patriot networks, you know, behind RBN at the time, GCN, of course, which then would be your, what do you call that, Alex Jones. So we were kind of like one of the bigger networks out there doing, they did a very good job. And then from time to time, I've seen Lee Rogers on your show. Are you still in contact with Lee? Do you collaborate at all with Lee?
I haven't spoken to Lee for probably 2 years, 3 years. No, I think maybe I've done one show with him since we stopped with the Daily Stormer.
Yeah, I've seen not too much either, but I was just kind of curious because I noticed that his name did pop up doing some research with you.
Yeah, I did quite a few shows with him. I mean, he sort of stepped in instead of Andrew Anglin, basically, because he was doing his info Stormer thing with his own website, similar sort of content. But yeah, I got on really well with Lee. But then when we left the Daily Stormer, I don't think I've really spoken to him that much since then. But there hasn't been any falling out or anything like that. I remember Oracle Broadcasting and RBN always seemed to be a little bit too conspiracy prone to me, and part of the idea of also of doing Radio Aryan, as it was back then, was also to provide a pro-Christian nationalist slant. I don't want to knock Renegade Broadcasting. I mean, they do a lot of good work, but they always seem to push this anti-Christian message. And, you know, I wanted to do something
different. I find it counterproductive. You know, Kyle and I had collaborated a lot in the past, and not, you know, we had some great work together, so I have nothing really that bad to say about it. But yeah, I find that it's counterproductive to go after the major, you know, demographic within the West, whether you like them or not. You cannot just dish the Christians. There are a lot of them very patriotic, and they're very helpful. Obviously, we don't all have to agree with everything. But we need to find allies. You can't just do it by yourself, is what I try to tell people.
Yeah, something like 60%, I think. 60% are Christian.
Yeah, correct. So, you know, you go back then. How did you guys deal with the Brexit? What was your guys' position on Brexit?
We were very keen to leave the EU. I'm getting a bit of feedback here.
Yeah, let me turn this down for you. Okay, don't worry.
Yeah, that's okay, better. Yeah, I was really keen for us to leave the EU, and all nationalists in Britain seemed to be united in that fact, and it seemed to be a proxy for stopping immigration. And everybody that you spoke to wanted a stop to immigration, and they saw this vote as a protest vote. That even if it didn't stop immigration, it would still be taken as being a vote to stop immigration. And of course, the people that wanted to stay in the EU, they made a big point of saying that that's what this vote was. And they were right. The majority of people just want a stop to what's happening in Britain. I think we're about only about 80% white now in Britain. Our capital city is 60-65% non-white. It's like an occupying army have taken over, and that was the one chance that we had to really stick it to the government, basically. And I think you had a lot of people that were really annoyed at the government for various other things, and also saw that as a protest vote. And it does seem as if now we are actually going to get Brexit. And I have to credit Boris Johnson for before Christmas, the way that he actually did it and the way that he pushed it through. And they're still trying to prevent it from happening while he was ill, and while Dominic Cummings was also in quarantine. They tried to push through a delay. They actually did the whole deal while both of those people were ill. They did a deal to delay Brexit for another year instead of us leaving in December of this year. And then when Dominic Cummings became well again, he put a stop to it all. And it was all set up so that instead of us asking the EU for it, the EU were going to ask us for it. But it was all arranged that we were going to say yes, which is a really disgusting trick to play on the British population. The people that support staying within the EU really are the worst kind of people. They will twist things. They will lie about things. They will twist the law. They politicized the Supreme Court last year. When Boris Johnson wanted to prorogue Parliament so that he could get Brexit done. And the Supreme Court decided that his reasoning for wanting to prorogue Parliament wasn't good enough for them. So they decided to step in and say it was illegal. And yet under their definition of the law, it would have meant that every single prorogation of Parliament over the last 100 years would have been illegal. And the main judge involved in that, she was a feminist. She gave talks saying how she was going to stop Brexit. We had our speaker in the House, who was also driving around in a car with "bollocks to Brexit" written on the car. And he's supposed to be completely impartial, and he was interfering. And he even gave the opposition the chance to dictate what was going to be discussed in Parliament, which is the prerogative of the party that is in power. So he totally trampled over all of tradition. And thankfully, he's not going to be given a knighthood now, and he's in absolute disgrace. But these are the sort of disgusting tricks that the people that want to stay in the EU were playing. And it does seem to have, it's divided people between patriots and communist-minded, liberal-minded, progressive-minded people, basically. People that love Britain. Maybe they're not racial, maybe they're not nationalist, but just people that love Britain and tradition and all that sort of thing. They support Brexit. And, you know, it's quite a big tent approach, I guess, or a large camp of people that you can say, well, I've got something in common with them. I know that, they want similar things to me, that they're not happy about the way that the country's going. So it's highlighted all of that. I think it's a great thing as well. When you think 17 million people voted for it. And what they were voting for is a policy that nationalists have been pushing for decades. Ever since the start of it, nationalists have been saying this isn't the union that we were told. This isn't just a trading bloc. They're gradually going to take over politics, gradually take over all the rulemaking, the lawmaking, the direction of the country, everything. And nationalists have been saying that for years. So to have 17 million people voting for what for a policy that had been a nationalist policy for all that time, that was very encouraging. And also to happen at the same time as Donald Trump getting in, I still think that was very, very encouraging to see Hillary Clinton lose on that night. That was an amazing night. It was a really great year, actually, Brexit and Donald Trump. I think it really revitalized us.
Sven, even I stayed up. I'm in Riyadh, the Middle East. I've been working with the university systems and other things over here for probably 10 years or so. And I stayed up the whole night, man. When it was election night, I was up the whole night watching everything. It's like, I couldn't believe it. They pulled it off type of thing. Go now to the coronavirus, though. You know, this has been in some ways a boon for nationalists, especially like in America. I've got stories now coming out because I follow the Indians and other international markets, and there's problems now where the Indians are losing their H-1B visas. They have to repatriate, but they can't go because they got American-born children, but they still got to get kicked out because the Americans are saying, get out. You're not welcome here. You have this type of problem, which would be positive, happening in the UK at all?
Well, they're finally talking about having a quarantine for people when they come into the country. But the amazing thing with that is that I'm still in a state of shock that they could think that when China was cutting up, you're getting bulldozers in and digging holes in the road around Wuhan and locking everybody in the tower blocks there and totally blocking off Wuhan from the rest of China. I'm still in a state of amazement that Britain and America could think, well, oh, we'll just ignore that and we'll keep flying people in from China. And we flew all these people in that were sick, and they're now trying to blame China for it. It's not up to China to close the borders with China. It's up to us to have done that. And I think the people in Britain can understand that that's what should have been done. The borders needed to be closed, and the borders weren't closed, and the politicians started saying that it was racism to try and want to close the borders. It was racism to say that it was a disease that was coming out of the Chinese community, which is exactly what it was. I mean, in Vietnam, they rounded up all the Chinese, and they never had a problem in Vietnam because they rounded up all the Chinese workers. And we didn't do that here. We said, oh no, that's totally racist. Boris Johnson even went around a hospital ward that was filled with COVID-19 patients shaking their hands, and then did a press conference the next day to show how anti-racist he was. He shook all the COVID-19 patients' hands. And then of course he comes down with the sickness about a week or two later. There's a similar thing in Italy. There was a video going about, hug a Chinese, show that you're not racist. Yeah, and that was in northern Italy.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people here, Sven, are saying, look, yeah, it's a disease, but who the hell were you to destroy our economies, destroy our countries equally? You know, the Italians, they're not rioting, but they are seriously protesting now against their government. They want them to resign over this reaction, locking them down so severely when 95% of those who died had comorbidities. Same in the United States. Over 50% of our people were basically murdered. They put COVID-19 patients in at the nursing homes, and then the nursing homes were basically just destroyed. So you have a lot of anger now by the people, at least in Italy and America, because look, you know, you're treating us like criminals, and now you're allowing all of this protest to go on, and we can't even have a haircut. You have these issues now going on in the UK where people are saying, hey, this is more of a scamdemic than a pandemic.
Well, I hope that's what's happening, but I just had a horrible thought then that, you know, maybe all that anger, they're trying to channel that into these Black Lives Matter protests and trying to channel that into anti-racism and get people to go out and protest against racism instead of protesting against what's gone on with this epidemic or plandemic or whatever you want to call it. We've had exactly the same thing happen here. We've had loads of people die in the old people's homes, and there's been no investigation into that they were just sending out people from the hospitals that they knew had COVID-19 into the old people's home, and it wiped them out, basically. But all you will hear about on the news is about how it's disproportionately affecting Black and minority ethnics and how something needs to be done about that. And we need an investigation into how all these old people were left to die. And I know that there has been some inflation of the numbers over there in America, but over here, yep, they didn't include the numbers of the old people that died in the care homes. They kept the numbers out. And in Europe, they said that it was something like 50% of all the dead actually came from the old people's homes. So what they did here, they didn't include the numbers from the old people's homes to try and say to people, well, it's not actually as bad as it is. And we haven't really had as many people die as you think. So it's hard to say whether they're trying to inflate the numbers or whether they're trying to cover the numbers up when they're still covering up these ones that are dying in the care homes. There's been people that have said, you know, we want to go back to work. You've got to lift the lockdown. And they came down really hard on them a couple of weeks back, and they were arresting people, and they were saying, no, you can't go out and have a protest. There was another protest as well. Paul Golding tried to arrange a protest when he was being charged under terrorism offences. And he was told, no, you can't have anybody there, and anybody that turns up is going to be arrested. And at the courthouse, the police even arrested his security team for being there. And that was just 2 weeks back. And then last week, we get all these Blacks coming out to protest against so-called racism. Apparently, there's only been, what was it? I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like 12 or under 100. Anyway, that's how many Black people have been killed in the last 30 years by the Metropolitan Police. So it's a very, very low number. And yet they're all out protesting about this, and nothing's been done about it. None of them have been arrested. They've just allowed to run riot, which I think is really a damning indictment of Sadiq Khan as the mayor and Cressida Dick as the Metropolitan Police Chief. Both of them are there really just because of diversity rather than any actual qualifications to be there. I mean, that is a huge embarrassment, what has happened over the last week, and yet you've got the politicians supporting them. Yeah, and the week before, they were arresting white people for protesting the lockdown. This week, they're cheering on the Blacks for rioting and looting.
And also, they talk about this, you know, racism, but they don't deal with the real racism, the underlying real racism. In America, it's the black on white crime. It's massive. In your country, it's the Pakistani grooming gangs against basically white young girls. And they kind of like want to sweep all this under the rug and then blame whitey for racism. And it's becoming unconscionable, really, the degree to which they are selecting their outrage at certain groups. Are you guys talking about that on the nationalist side in your country?
Well, yeah, there's been a big push this week. In particular, they had Question Time, which is a political program they have on the BBC, where they get left-wing talking heads on there, and they have a hand-picked audience that asks them milquetoast questions. And while that was on, there was a big drive on Twitter to get this hashtag up there, Justice for Ellie. This girl called Ellie, who was savagely beaten, she's shown the pictures of it, because she didn't turn up to these grooming gang parties for the last 6 weeks because she's been under lockdown. And they gave her this savage beating, and she'd been to the police, reported this grooming gang. She had backup evidence, 6 or 7 other girls that this has happened to as well. They brought all this, all the evidence, made the allegations to the police, I think about a year ago, and the police locked her up for breach of bail conditions. So they actually arrested the victim once again. And this is a pattern that's been happening right the way through all these problems that we've had with grooming gangs, is that the girls who have made the allegations have been locked up, or the fathers of the girls have been locked up for trying to get their girls.
This is straight out of, you know, the worst. I live in Saudi, okay? So I actually understand how the law systems work better than most. And it's not nearly what they say in the West, but we are going to have a break here after all. Okay, we're going to have the bottom of the hour break, Sven. Back with more right after this, everybody.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back. Sven here, and we do banjos at the end of the show here. It means we had a great show. So we always put the banjo music towards the end.
Yeah, enjoyed that.
Sven Longshanks joining us again from the UK, everybody. Again, his network, Radio Albion at radioalbion.com. I myself have been giving it a listen. Sven, I actually have. And I've enjoyed the production. I think you got some really great production, Sven. So thanks again for coming on and sharing some of your time here. You're obviously in the UK, BritainFirst.org, Emily Jones, White Lives Matter, BritainFirst.org. You know anything about that group, how it's starting to form?
Britain First, yeah. They're a civic nationalist group. Been around for some years. It's basically run by Paul Golding. I mean, I don't have that much to do with them. It's more counter jihad and Muslim bothering. A nationalist organization that I would support in Britain is Patriotic Alternative, which is Mark Cullett's organization with Laura Towler as his deputy, and that's been going for the last year. And he used to be, I think he was head of communications for the BNP. He was quite high up in the BNP. There were a couple of documentaries that Channel 4 actually did about him about 20 years ago when he was very young. And he's stuck with nationalism for the last 20 years, and he's now forming his own organization, which I'm 100% behind. I mean, I've been waiting for a decent nationalist organization in Britain that I could really get behind and support, and Patriotic Alternative are the one, and that they support repatriation for as many as we can possibly repatriate. And they've got ways of doing this, particularly immigrants or non-whites that have been given prison sentences. You can offer to buy their passport back from them, offer to give them even more money for each member of the family that you send back. And some people will say, well, yes, but that isn't going to be enough because they've got the real gravy train here. There's all so much money that they can earn here. Well, or even if they're not working, they can just send that back. But if you had that program in place with lots of other programs, such as only speaking English, no translators, none of these anti-free speech laws, no specialized housing for them, no specialized education for them, having to pay for the NHS. If you put all those things in place as well, then they would want to go back themselves. It would be voluntary repatriation, which is the some of the programs that they push for.
Denmark, I think. It's either Denmark or Holland. I think it's Denmark. They had the first net minus immigration in a long time this year. They've actually seen a net migration, so it is possible.
Yeah, it is possible. I mean, they haven't had that many go back. I think it's only in the hundreds. But I mean, it's amazing that they have actually managed to halt it and get a few of them to go back. I mean, that's a great victory in itself.
We're experiencing in our case. By the way, the story I was going to say before we went into the break is that the stereotype is that if you're a woman and you get raped and you go to the authorities, they're going to arrest you, right? That actually doesn't happen here too much, you know. Usually you're going to get hammered if you're the guy. It's not the other way around. But they actually make it sound in the UK now like if you're a white woman and you accuse the Pakistanis of rape, they arrest you like the stereotypical Islamic law that they like to talk about.
Definitely. That's what I was thinking about. I mean, over there is because the woman's, because they're,
yeah, but it's not,
it's
true.
The same
that's
thing,
the funny
really.
Thing is, it's actually not true. It's not how it happens here. If you get accused by a woman, you're done, man. You avoid that situation. You don't want to be in a situation where you can have some woman charging you because you'll be hammered. In other words, it's not nearly what they're claiming to be.
Yeah, I can remember reading about a British tourist, and I think she reported that she'd been raped, and she got locked up for it. So maybe there was other issues that we weren't being told over here in Britain.
Usually, for sure. But yeah, if you're especially an Arab guy with an Arab woman, it's you're done. You got to be really careful. In other words, so in other words, it's not just so clean cut. But now the way you describe it, it's what they try to paint over here. You know what I mean? They're doing over there in the UK too. It's rather ironic. Another issue, you know, in America, we have what's called, I'm starting to call it the Purple Revolution. And that's basically a color revolution to take over. That's what this is all about. By Antifa, these are paramilitaries of the Democratic Party. Also, I'm being an international guy in the defense industry. I'm pretty sure Mike Pompeo is doing something very dirty in Hong Kong. I'm pretty sure. I'm not there, but I'm pretty sure. And that's why the Chinese government is doing what they're doing. They're fighting on Pompeo. Now, with all this mess that probably Pompeo is causing, your government wants to bring over 3 million Hong Kongers and say, hey, welcome. What's with the story on that? What are people saying about that?
Well, I think there's a lot of anger about that already and saying, what
yes,
do you
think
you're
so.
Doing? connection have they got to us? Yeah, I think that over the next couple of weeks we're going to see more pushback against that. But yeah, definitely that's what's going on in Hong Kong. When you see the Hong Kong rioters waving American flags, and you think how would they feel if the Black Lives Matter rioters in America were waving Chinese flags? It's blatant the interference that America is doing around the world. One thing I did find funny was the Chinese and the Iranian response to these riots in America, where they were saying America has been oppressing the people and they shouldn't be attacking the peaceful protesters and the world is watching. And they're even using the same language that Donald Trump used when rioters were setting fire to Tehran a while back. So I did find that humorous. But I think Boris Johnson and the British administration, they understand that the British people want a stop to immigration. So what they've tried to do is come out with this points-based system, and they're trying to push Priti Patel as being very hard on immigration. But of course, how can she be hard on immigration? She is she's the daughter of immigrants, and a points-based system.
Yeah, I look at this, Sven, and I'm like, Priti Patel, she's not even, with all due respect, she's not British. She's not a, why is she deciding for Britain these types of issues? She's not British. You know, it's like America too. You know, we got Somalians running Minnesota now, which was a former pristine Nordic country, you know, or area. I don't see it. You know, when I look at the debates on the BBC about Brexit and things, I didn't see any British people.
Well, they like to decorate the cabinet with non-whites as if they're trophies, and they like to boast about the fact that this is the most diverse cabinet that there has ever been. And Boris Johnson will talk about how his parentage is half Turkish, half Jewish, half Muslim, and he seems to be very proud of that. And I think the British people are sick of it. This is why they support somebody like Nigel Farage, because at least he is British. I mean, he might be a civic nationalist, but at least he's got a lot of British tradition there, and he sounds like a competent Englishman. When you look at people like our guy that's responsible for the economy and the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, I mean, people just look at them and they're like, what? You can't even pronounce some of these people's names. But they're trying to push this points-based system, which is what Australia has, but it's not going to limit the numbers that are coming into the country. And if you limit the ones that really aren't that intelligent, it just means that they're going to bring in more of the ones that are intelligent, and there's going to be even more competition for the white people who are the white people with degrees, who are the most under-resourced group in the country is the white working class. Nothing's done about them. Someone tried to help out a university a while back and said, I want to give you a big grant to help out the underhelped white working class. And the university said, well, we can't have it. We can't have it because we'll be accused of being racist if we do. And this was right after Stormzy. This black rapper had just made a huge grant to a university to help young black people out. And the university refused to accept it because they said that they would be accused of being racist, even though the white working class are the most failed group in the whole country. And yet they're the country, they are the group that would be most likely to succeed just by their average IQ alone. So that we're investing as much money as we can in the people least likely to succeed, and the people that are the most likely to succeed are just being left behind. But I do see them coming to nationalism. I mean, we've got a big nationalist revival that's happening at the moment. Before this lockdown, we had 200 people turn up for our ethno-nationalist conference, and Patriotic Alternative was going to start different chapters throughout the country, and Mark and Laura were going to go and visit these different chapters and get them started this summer, but we've had this lockdown, so it's all had to be put on hold. But just before it happened, we had really encouraging feeling throughout the country after this conference that we had, because that's getting 200 people there for an ethno-nationalist conference. That's, you know, that's the biggest ethno-nationalist conference in Britain that I can remember happening. I mean, UKIP may get more, but they're not ethno-nationalists. So things are moving towards us. Also with the Tommy Robinson movement, that's all fallen apart. He's lost half his subscribers because people are realizing that his loyalty isn't to the British people. His loyalty is to Israel.
Pull it off as long as he did, man. It was like he was so obvious to us outside the scene that this guy was such a Zionist firster. And isn't that a key issue, though, for you guys in the UK? You have a government that really is occupied pretty much like America does.
Oh, it's very much like America. You can't have a political party that doesn't have a Friends of Israel wing. And you just have to deal with it. I mean, this is why I say, well, if you do get political parties and they do talk about Islam, well, don't not support them because they're not talking about Israel, because in 10 years' time, they might not even be able to talk about Islam. Because we already have the mainstream parties can't talk about Jews in a sensible way. I don't mean talking about them in a hateful way, but just pointing out the things that they do that are to their benefit, such as call for more immigration. Jews love multiculturalism, which they think is great because they don't stand out so much. They advocate for it wherever they are, but that's not good for the host country. And we need to have a sensible conversation about that, without being accused of being anti-Semitic.
Now, isn't during this lockdown, I've seen reports, and I don't know, but Nigel Farage has tried to go out and say, look, the immigration's still coming, man. They're still shipping people in. You got these people coming off the coast of France, and you got these basically shuttle buses in the way of small boats, a little new Dunkirk, you might want to call it, but this time for refugees. Is that still ongoing?
Yeah, he's been doing really well, actually. I mean, I can't fault him over the last month. He's been going out in fishing boats, and he's been recording the French Navy that have actually been accompanying these dinghies that are loaded up with non-white invaders. And the French Navy has been accompanying them right up into British waters, where they're then handed over to the British Coast Guard, who then ferry them ashore to Britain, take them ashore and put them in housing, and give them information on how they can claim asylum and all the rest of it. And they get a certain amount of money each week. And if their asylum claims fail, well, they still get the money, and then they can appeal. And they know that if they can get to Britain, then that's it. They're not going to be sent back to France. But to think that the French Navy are actually accompanying these people all the way into British waters is absolutely shocking. And we've got Nigel Farage to thank for filming that. The police have tried to stop him.
Not just that, but your Navy then ferrying them the other half of the way. That seems almost absurd.
Well, what they've done, Pretty Patel has said it's to do with international law. And I've got, and, still got this feedback in my ears here.
Not sure why that happened, but okay, go ahead. Might be a Skype issue. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's still. I'm just going to mute you while I talk because it's too confusing for me here, Dennis. Yeah. What was I saying then about the. The French Navy. Sorry, I forgot. I've completely lost my train of thought now.
Sorry about that, man. I don't know why it started, but okay. Basically, we're talking about the British Navy ferrying the migrants over back to England after picking it up from the French Navy.
Yeah, well, Nigel Farage was filming that, and they tried to stop him. The French Navy tried to stop him, and then the police have tried to stop him as well. And he's been saying, well, journalists are essential work. Journalists are supposed to be able to go out and do their work because the BBC are going out and doing what they have to do, and all the other mainstream journalists are. And it seems that if you work for the alternative media, then they're not going to class you as a journalist. They tried to arrest one of the Breitbart journalists who was covering one of these demonstrations over the lockdown as well. So you've got this double standard there. But Nigel Farage seems to be doing really well. That was the point I was getting to, was the explanation for what was happening. Priti Patel has said that it's down to international law and maritime law. And if somebody says that they don't want to be rescued, you can't rescue them. So the French Navy see these boats, and the boats say, we're fine, we're absolutely fine. So the French Navy tails them to make sure that they are fine. And then as soon as they know that they're into British waters, they then say, help, help, we need rescuing. And then due to maritime law, the Coast Guard or the RNLI then has to go and pick the boat up. And that's the excuse that they're given. But we've paid France millions and millions of pounds to stop this from happening. And if they just took them back to France, it would stop. They're supposed to call for asylum in the first country that they come to that is not at war. And France isn't at war. You've got about 10 different countries that they have to pass through before they actually get to France. They should just be sending them back to the first one. My co-host on Real Britannia suggested the other day that what they should be doing is getting these big cruise ships that they can't use at the moment that have gone out of business due to coronavirus, and put them all on one of these cruise ships, and then take them back round to Africa and drop them off. But I mean, even in Italy, they've had the same problem. The NGOs have been going almost right up to the beaches in Libya and picking them up and then taking them to Italy. But at least then it's the NGOs rather than Italy doing it. But here, yeah, we've got the Coast Guard going out there, meeting up with the French Navy, and then bringing these people in. And I think it must be into the thousands now since the start of the lockdown, because there was a big increase as soon as they knew that we were locked up in our homes. It was like hundreds a day. And that's just the ones that they were catching. I mean, there must be a lot more that are managing to work their way in that aren't actually being picked up on by the police. So there's a lot of strong feeling about that. And yeah, it's good of Nigel Farage to be doing that. and exposing that. Just have to wait and see what happens. But Priti Patel also, I mean, in some ways she isn't so bad, because they did try to keep this grooming gang review from us. We had our last Home Secretary promised that there would be a review into whether ethnicity played any part in the grooming gangs. And we know that it does, because over 80%, I think it may have been 90% of the people in these grooming gangs are Pakistani, and the rest are Muslim as well. And he said there was going to be a no-holds-barred investigation into this to see if there was anything cultural that was influencing this phenomena. And they did the study, and then we were told that they're not going to make this study public. And he had promised that it would be made public, so there was a big petition about it. 150,000 people said, look, we want to see this review. When you get 10,000 people, they have to answer it. When you get 100,000, they have to debate it in Parliament. It got to 150,000. They still hadn't mentioned it. And then they sort of fobbed us off with this answer, saying that they were going to donate money to the victims and they needed a safe space to study it. And then the actual petitions review panel in Parliament wrote back to them and said, look, this is not good enough. You've got to answer this properly. And Priti Patel has said, well, okay, we will now show you this grooming gang report, and it will appear later in the year after it's been looked at by a review panel. So they may censor it. But there was also talk that she had actually got really angry about the fact that this grooming gang review wasn't being shown to the public, and she was actually swearing at the Home Office. And this is one of the reasons why the mainstream media are very much against her. And that may be true, because she is Hindu, and there's been lots of problems in the past with Muslims doing the same thing to Hindus. So it could.
She gets it, yeah, because it's a problem also in India directly. You know, they have the problem between the Islam and Hindu equally.
And the Sikhs. There's been quite a few Sikh victims over here as well of these grooming gangs, although it is majority white victims. So, I mean, it may play to our benefit that she is a Hindu, or it may not. But really, it's just an embarrassment to have somebody non-white that's in charge, that's the Home Secretary, responsible for borders and responsible
yes for the police. Unheard of. Honestly, it's unheard of. Over here, this would never happen. No way. You know, the only certain protected tribes are going to have these types of positions, because it's the national security at stake. We got about 5 minutes to go. I want to deal with an issue that's we cover here a lot over the years, because we have what we call an Oy Vey moment, where we talk about just some of the stupid things Jews are doing and complaining about. But in the UK, you're always prominent, because it seems like every time you turn around, the Jewish community is getting some candidate disqualified over some perceived slight. Isn't the UK basically now in a state where Jews pick and choose who, through the use of quote-unquote anti-Semitism, who the public is allowed to choose as public servants? Aren't we in a situation now where Jews are controlling this almost entirely, to where nobody can get into public service unless they hold a particular view that Jews approve of?
Well, I think that's never been more apparent than with Jeremy Corbyn as the leader of the Labour Party. That was just incredible, the way they accused him of being an anti-Semite and said that he was refusing to accept their definition of what anti-Semitism is. But the bizarre thing is that he was put in power by Momentum, which is run by Jews, just left-wing Jews. So what you actually had there was a fight between right-wing Jews and left-wing Jews. And the right-wing Jews want people criticizing Israel to be classed as anti-Semitism. And I think that's more at the root of it. So they want people that are against Zionism to be classed as anti-Semites. But they succeeded. This tiny, tiny group, which make up, I think, 0.2% of the population in Britain, they succeeded in preventing the Labour Party from getting into power. They're that powerful. They could demand Jeremy Corbyn see their rabbis and answer to their demands. Basically, they had a big list of demands that he had to do before they would give him the seal of approval. So he's out, and now we've got Keir Starmer in, who, surprise, surprise, is married to a Jew. And the first thing he does is talk about all the things he's going to do for the Jews to try and get them to support the Labour Party again. And he's
wasn't Keir Starmer involved also in the cover up of the pedophile rings with the BBC?
I think he worked for the Crown Prosecution Service, and he was the one that said these people that claim to be victims have always got to be believed, which played pretty badly when there was this guy that was making all these allegations about these politicians and them all being pedophiles. And a lot of the politicians were arrested, and some of them, I think some of them died before their name was actually cleared. And then it was discovered that he was just a total fantasist. But because of this always believe the victim thing, and this ties in with the hate crime laws, where if somebody is an ethnic minority and they make an allegation that a hate crime has happened, they have to be believed, regardless of if there's any evidence or whether look at it. And he was the guy responsible for that. Yeah, this Keir Starmer.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, yeah, that type of legal reasoning. They're trying to bring it to the States too, by the way, but it's just completely insane. Yeah, you know, I can always say that's just insane. Hey, I accuse you today. I don't like you. I don't like the way you made my burger. You're an anti-Semite. Sorry, dude. We'll see you in court.
They have hate incidents in here now as well. Something that doesn't actually meet the threshold for a crime. But what they will do is they will record all of that, and it will go on your record. And there's a police officer that's actually challenging that right now. He wrote some tweets about transvesticism and trannies. And he fell foul of the law, and they arrested him and told him it was a hate incident. And he took it to court, and the judge said that this was having a chilling effect on free speech. And he got this hate incident thing removed from him, but said that the actual legislation and the wording wasn't going to be changed. So the guy that took out this tribunal or whatever it was called, he's now gone up to the next court, and he's appealing it again because he wants to get this whole guidance removed about so-called hate incidents. Because it can be just, if you're an ethnic minority, you can just make this accusation about anything with no evidence against whoever you want to say it about, and the police have to go along with it. It's like saying, "Well, I don't like someone."
I'm hearing there's some pushback then, Sven.
Yeah, there is pushback. There is, as I say, that there's legal pushback. How can you have laws telling you that you must like a certain people? You must like them. It's illegal to not.
It's like, you're insane, guys. You know, and then if a court wants to uphold it, you're even further insane. Sven, it looks like they don't have the bottom of the break thing set. They redid the server recently. So why don't you just give a quick plug with where they can find you, listen to you, and all that fun stuff. And then we're going to call it a show.
Yeah, you can find me at radioalbion.com, 12 o'clock Eastern, 5 p.m. British time. We start with new content. We have 6 hours of content a day. It's not all our own. Our own content is on at 5 o'clock and 12 o'clock and 8 o'clock and 3 p.m. American time. So every 3 hours, basically, you'll get some brand new content if you tune in to radioalbion.com. We have two new shows a day, and we also restream Stormfront and David Duke. And we've got a lot of really good hosts. We've got Grandpa Lampshade, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, Dennis Wise, Max Musson, a lot of interesting stuff there. Plus, we've got a lot of historical stuff. So, yeah, just check out the radioalbion.com site, and also check out patrioticalternative.co.uk, which is the nationalist organisation that... I wholeheartedly support. So I give them a plug as well.
Okay. Sven, thanks so much. It's 7:59. We should be off the air at 8. They didn't play the break. So thanks so much for coming, Sven. We'll talk soon and appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for inviting me on.
All righty. Take care, everybody. Good night, everybody from Riyadh. See you guys Thursday inside the iLive primetime. Good night, everybody.